This is the last day of this August 2018 7-day session. We'll take up another koan today. And this is from the collection of koans called the Shoyoroku, translated as either the Book of Serenity or the Book of Equanimity. And this is number 13, Linji's Blind Donkey. When Linji was about to die, he entrusted Sansheng with his Dharma line, saying, "After my passing, do not destroy my treasury of the eye of the Dharma." Sansheng asked, "How would I dare destroy your treasury of the eye of the Dharma?" Linji, "If someone asks you about it, how will you respond?" Sansheng shouted. And then Linji said, "Who would have known that my treasury of the eye of the Dharma would perish in this blind donkey?" Well, Linji, was a Chinese master of the 9th century or so, and when Zen reached Japan, they Japanized his name to Rinzai. This is the famous Rinzai. Linji. Turning back to our book, Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. He's listed in the 11th generation, a chapter called the 11th generation of Chan. And he died in 866 at the age of 53, which was when Dogen, the age that Dogen died. These are two of the most famous masters in the Linji school and in the Soto school, respectively. And they both died at 53. It sounds awfully young now. He was a disciple of the illustrious Wang Bo, Obako in Japanese. After taking the vows of a monk, Linji studied the sutras, the Vinaya, and the various doctrines that were carried on the currents of Buddhism in his era. Although he practiced under Guishan, his enlightenment came about under Huang Bo. And this is the account. It's quite long. It says, from the beginning of his residence at Huangbo, Huangbo would be the name also of the mountain that from whose name this master, Huangbo, took his name. From the beginning of his residence at Huangbo, Linji's performance of his duties was exemplary. At that time, Muzhou served as head monk. Muzhou asked Linji, "How long have you been practicing here?" Linji said, 3 years. Muzhou said, "Have you gone for an interview with the master or not?" Doksan, let's say. "Have you gone to Doksan with the master or not?" Linji said, "I haven't done so. I don't know what to ask him." That problem will be familiar to many of you. No matter how many times I say you don't have to have anything to ask me in Doksan, "I haven't done so, I don't know what to ask him." Muzhou said, "Why not ask him, what is the essential meaning of Buddhism?" So Linji went to see Huangbo. Before he could finish his question, Huangbo struck him. Linji went out and Muzhou asked him, "What happened when you asked him?" Vinji said, before I could get the words out, he hit me. I don't understand. Mujo said, go ask him again. So Linji asked Wangbo again, and again Wangbo hit him. We can. You might think that Linji is just kind of a knucklehead for going back there, but try to appreciate how desperate he must have been. What a deep need he had to receive the Master's teaching and overcoming his fear. Linji asked a third time, and Huangbo hit him again. Linji revealed this to Mujo, saying, before, you urged me to ask about the Dharma, but all I got was a beating. Because of evil karmic hindrances, I'm not able to comprehend the essential mystery. So today, I'm going to leave here. Notice how he doesn't blame Huangbo. He just takes this as his own limitations. That too is this a sign of what an uncommon person he must have been. Mujo said, if you're going to leave, you must say goodbye to the master. No, it's not what you think. Linji bowed and went off. But before he went to back to Wangbo, Mujo went to Wangbo and said, that monk who asked you the questions, although he's young, he's extraordinary. If he comes to say goodbye to you, please give him appropriate instruction. Later, he'll become a great tree under which everyone on earth will find refreshing shade. The next day, when Linji came to say goodbye to Wangbo, Wangbo said, you don't need to go somewhere else. Just go over to the Gaoan Monastery and practice with Dai Yu. He'll explain it to you. We don't know why Linji turfed him to this other master. Just remains a mystery. When Linji reached Dai Yu, Dai Yu said, where have you come from? Linji said, from Wangbo. Dai Yu said, what did Wangbo say? Linji said, three times I asked him about the essential doctrine, and three times I got hit. I don't know if I made some error or not. Dai Yu said, Wangbo has old grandmotherly affection and endures all this difficulty for your sake, and here you are asking whether you've made some error or not. And upon hearing these words, Linji was awakened. It's one of these many awakening experiences that can't be explained. No doubt the timing was critical, as it so often is. Whereas Linji hadn't, his mind was not ripe yet under when his encounters with Huangbo. It must have been when Dai Yu uttered these words. And now we see a phenomenon that is not uncommon with deep awakening, is this upsurge of pride. It seems contrary. It seems like it just doesn't make sense that you've seen clear through the self, the ego, and yet there comes with it this, maybe it's unfair to say pride in this case. It's obvious in other cases of these masters, it's pride. Here, it's certainly great certainty and authority that came from it. And therefore, Linji then says, actually, Wangbo's dharma is not so great. Dai Yu grabbed him and said, why, you little bedwetter? You just came and you said you don't understand, but now you say there's not so much to Wang Bo's teaching. What do you see? Speak, speak. Lin Chi then hit Dai Yu on his side 3 times. Dai Yu let go of him, saying, "Your teacher is Wang Bo. I've got nothing to do with it." Lin Chi then left Dai Yu and returned to Wang Bo. Wang Bo saw him and said, "This fellow who's coming and going, how can he ever stop?" Probably testing him. See how he'd respond. Lin Chi said, "Only through grandmotherly concern." Lin Chi then bowed and stood in front of Wang Bo. Wang Bo said, "Who has gone and returned?" Another testing question. Lin Chi said, "Yesterday I received the master's compassionate instruction. Today I went and practiced at Dai Yu's." Wang Bo said, "What did Dai Yu say?" Lin Chi then recounted his meeting with Dai Yu. Wang Bo said, "That old fellow Dai Yu talks too much. Next time I see him, I'll give him a painful swat." Lin Chi said, "Why wait until later? Here's a swat right now." And then Lin Chi hit Wang Bo. Wang Bo yelled, "This crazy fellow has come here and grabbed the tiger's whiskers." That Lin Chi shouted. Wang Bo then yelled to his attendant, "Take this crazy man to the practice hall." Lin Chi became known as a teacher for his shout. Or maybe it's his stick. There are these two guys, Lin Chi and De Shan. One was known for his shout, the other for his stick. Here's another exchange between Wang Bo and first the cook. Wang Bo entered the kitchen and asked the cook, "What are you doing?" The cook said, "Selecting rice for the monk's meal." Wang Bo said, "How much do they eat in one meal?" This is not idle curiosity on Wang Bo's part. The cook said, 2.5 stone, which we see here in brackets is 150 kilos. That must stagger the minds of many people to picture that much rice. On one of my pilgrimages to China, I visited some huge monasteries and was able to see in the kitchen, and they had these great pots. They're like 6 feet across, where they had these big old wooden spoons about the same height, and to make rice for these hundreds of monks, hundreds of them. So they dealt in these great quantities. So the cook says, 2.5 stone. Wang Bo said, "Isn't that too much?" Cook said, "I'm afraid it's not enough." That's a classic concern of head cooks. Wang Bo hit him. The cook then related this event to Lin Chi. Lin Chi said, "I'll check out the old fellow for you." Lin Chi then went and stood in attendance for Wang Bo. Wang Bo brought up his conversation with the cook. Lin Chi said, "The cook doesn't understand. Please, master, say a turning phrase on his behalf." Wang Bo said, "You ask it." Lin Chi said, "Isn't that too much?" That's the same line that Wang Bo had used with the cook. "Isn't that too much?" Wang Bo said, "Tomorrow, have another meal." Lin Chi said, "Why say tomorrow? Have a meal right now." And so saying, he hit Wang Bo. Rice has this enormous significance in in China and Japan, the character for rice is the same as that for life. So there's a code in this exchange. Oh wait, that wasn't the end. So Lin Chi hits him. Wang Bo yells, "This crazy man has come in here and grabbed the tiger's whiskers again." And Lin Chi shouted and went out. Another time, Lin Chi went to visit Bodhidharma's stupa. Bodhidharma is the founder, considered the founder of Zen. The caretaker there said, "Will you first bow to the Buddha, or will you first bow to Bodhidharma?" Lin Chi said, "I don't bow to either one." The caretaker said, "How did the Buddha and Bodhidharma offend you?" Lin Chi shook his sleeves and left. My guess is that he felt he just wouldn't be able to, they wouldn't be able to have a meeting of minds there. Didn't see any reason in sticking around. Here's another one. One last one. Lin Chi said, "There's a type of student who goes to Mount Wutai to seek out Manjushri." Mount Wutai was said to be the abode of Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. Goes to seek out Manjushri. That student has already made a mistake. There's no Manjushri at Mount Wutai. Do you want to know Manjushri? It's just what is in front of your eyes. From first to last, it's not anything else. Don't doubt it anywhere you go. It's the living Manjushri. It, to us, it may sound strange that a monk could take this Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, as a, literally as someone living there that they could have an audience with. So many of the monks were uneducated, it seems. There's another koan where, number 31 in the Mumonkan, where the monks, one after another, would stop this old woman at a tea stand on the road and say, what is the way to Mount Wutai? And her response each time was, "Go straight ahead." And now the other character in this koan, Sansheng. He was a prominent disciple of Lin Chi, of course. So prominent that he compiled Lin Chi's words in the Record of Lin Chi. This is the source of Lin Chi's teaching. It's published. There's at least a couple translations of it. The Record of Lin Chi. After Lin Chi's death, Sansheng traveled to encounter other, they list these masters, great masters. Each of them in turn sharpened Sansheng's abilities. A couple of exchanges here. When Sansheng arrived at Mount Yang, Yangshan asked him, "What's your name?" Sansheng said, Hui Ji. Yangshan said, "Hui Ji is my name." Sansheng said, "My name is Hui Ran." this is pretty opaque if you don't realize that Sancheng's nickname is Hui Ran, and Yangshan's is Hui Ji. It's a little easier in there's a koan in the Blue Cliff record where it starts off with Ejaku saying, what's your name? And Enen says, Ejaku. And Ejaku says, my name is Ejaku. And then they laugh. Are they one or are they two? When Sancheng met Xiangyan, another great master, Xiangyan asked, where are you from? Sancheng said, from Linji. Sancheng said, did you bring Linji's shout? Sancheng suddenly picked up a cushion and struck Xiangyan in the mouth with it. An apple doesn't fall far from the tree. When Sancheng arrived at Mount De, he started to arrange his sitting cushions when Deshan asked, don't put out your meal apron. There's no rice here. There again is the rice, significance of the word rice. Sancheng said, although it's here, it can't be shown. Deshan took his staff and made to strike Sancheng. Sancheng grabbed it and pushed Deshan onto the meditation platform, the tan. Deshan laughed loudly. And Sancheng shouted and went out. So yeah, this is Deshan. This is the other one. Remember, one of them famous for his shout and the other for his staff. Deshan was the one with the staff and Linji for the shout. And here's another one. When Sancheng went to another great master, Xuefeng, he heard Xuefeng give a teaching that all persons without exception have an ancient mirror. This monkey has an ancient mirror. Can't know just from this little dialogue what he's referring to by this monkey. Sancheng stepped forth and said, for endless kalpas it has been nameless. Why does the master propose it to be an ancient mirror? Xuefeng said, it's because of defective existence. Sancheng said, as for me, I don't see where you came up with this. Xuefeng said, my mistake. I have many duties as abbot. This kind of response, it sounds like just an apology on the part of Xuefeng. My mistake, I have many duties as abbot. But don't be so sure. This could be admired as a way of yielding like a willow, like clouds and water. One last one. Sancheng watched as Bao Shao entered the lecture hall. Must be another master. When Bao Shao passed by, Sancheng shoved another monk out in front of him. Bao Shao hit the monk. And at that, Sancheng said, if the elder, that is Bao Shao, the teacher, if the elder treats people in this manner, then he's blind, even though the eyes of everyone in Zhengzhou City are here. So he may have shoved him out in front of the master in order to test him, see about his response. So I'm sure that many of you, this sounds like just so much crazy stuff, used to me. Not that you have to ever really be able to decode it all, but to appreciate the vitality of the Zen school through this, the going beyond words, beyond explanations, and just bringing forth the whole person. And that's what we see in this koan. We'll go back to the koan now. So Linji's on his deathbed. And he had apparently given Dharma transmission to his disciple Sancheng. And then on his deathbed he says, after my passing, do not destroy my treasury of the eye of the Dharma. Sounds uneasy about his successor. This is the first point of the koan. Seems to be saying, don't destroy my lineage. But he doesn't say that. He says, do not destroy my treasury of the eye of the Dharma. Remember earlier in Sesshin where we were talking about how the Chinese rendered abstract Indian Buddhist terms into concrete terms. And one of those we mentioned is that the essence, the essential in Indian Buddhism became the eye, E-Y-E, the eye of the Dharma. You can imagine a teacher, I suppose, in some cases, being concerned as he or she is dying that the successor will not be able to keep the lineage going. But the eye of the Dharma? Really? And then Sancheng asked, how would I dare destroy your treasury of the eye of the Dharma? It's an important point for the student to demonstrate in Doksan. And then Linji, if someone asks you about it, how will you respond? So he's kind of resetting the dialogue. Sancheng came up with a response, and now Linji is just shifting a little. If someone asks you about it, how will you respond? In other words, what else can you say or do? And at that, Sancheng shouted. We have no way of knowing what he shouted, what it sounded like, but one common shout of these masters and monks in ancient China was the word quats. Quats, of course, can't be quite defined or explained, but it's a kind of a nullifier. It's just a wiping everything clean. Sweeping it all away. it's sort of it's not that different from this shaking of the sleeves that also is something you see in these dialogues where the exchange ends with a master walking out, shaking his sleeves. Done. Nothing. And then Linchi. Who would have known that my treasury of the eye of the Dharma would perish in this blind donkey? There was a style in ancient China of praise by slander. We see some of this in some cultures of the world, where what appears on the surface to be critical or poking, jabbing at the person is not really that. So I had to get used to this after getting married. My wife is half Italian, comes her mother's Italian, and I wasn't used to having her family sort of jabbing me here and there, and she said, "Believe me, it means they like you." If I had more confidence in my relationship at the time, I might have said, "Hey, quit busting my balls." That came later. But the shout here. Think of all the things he might have said, but instead, it's just the shout. Emerson said, "Sometimes a scream is better than a thesis." Recently, I read of just about 10 days ago, a story in the New York Times about a young Swedish woman who, on a flight to Afghanistan from Sweden, had held up the flight by refusing to sit down. According to the story, she was convinced that one of the passengers, an Afghani, was being sent back to Afghanistan where she was sure that he would be executed, and she couldn't bear it. And she refused to sit down. The airline regulations, laws are such that the captain can't take off as long until all of the passengers are seated. And she stood there in the middle of the plane, in the cabin there, and tried to explain to the other passengers why she wouldn't sit down, because she was convinced that to do so would result in the death of this man. Said that the article said that some passengers were getting angry with her, others were clapping. You can imagine the scene. At one point she started crying, but she wouldn't sit down. That's a shout. Don't. No. And then they expelled her and the Afghani from the plane before then taking off. Don't know the epilogue to that story. I think also of these Vietnamese monks, the monks in Vietnam, Buddhist monks who set fire to themselves, and that many people feel that the photographs of them in flames, sitting in flames, did a great deal to turn public opinion about the war, turn it around. What most people in the public wouldn't have appreciated, at least consciously, was the posture of these monks. One in particular, I have the photo, one of my files, he's sitting ramrod straight in a perfect zazen posture. Spine stretched up, chin tucked in. It's just amazing. What a shout that was. Rosa Parks refusing to sit down. How many courageous people in the face of injustice or injustice shouted in their own way, even in silence. Comes a point in practice when we're still working on our first call on or haven't seen into our true nature, comes a point when there has to come that shout. Enough! Enough! No more! Hakoin's words, we go beyond ego and pass clever words. But this shout of Sansheng was not even of that order of crying out against injustice. Something of a different order entirely. It's more like the shout of Ganto, when he died. Here's the story. During the chaos at the end of the Tang Dynasty, bandits were to be found everywhere. The monks all left the temple to hide in the forest. Yantao alone stayed at the temple where he sat in meditation. One day, the head of the bandits came to the temple. He was enraged because there was no booty there, nothing to steal. So he brandished his knife and ran it through Yantao. Yantao remained composed, then let out a resounding scream and died. The sound was heard for 10 miles around. This story was so troubling to the young Hakuin that he had a real crisis of faith. No doubt assuming that it was just a cry of fear on Yantao's part. But what else could it have been? Zen Master Dogen said, when you were born, you could roar like a lion. The purity of a newborn, that first cry. Nothing held back. Great cry of life. We can hear it in the birds singing at dawn. They never hold anything back. some birds are louder than others, but it's just this purity to it. It's just undivided, single-minded, complete, every time. No hesitation, no anything except just the pure song. Who would have known that my treasury of the eye of the Dharma would perish in this blind donkey? Blind donkey, maybe a blind donkey would be seen as absolutely useless. But Sanshung became a fine master in his own right. So what was Linchi really saying when he said that? We'll stop now and recite the four vows. All beings without number,
I bow to liberate endless blind matter, I bow to uproot dharma gaze beyond measure, I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha, I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gaze beyond measure. I bow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I bow to attain all beings without number. I bow to liberate endless blind passions. I bow to uproot dharma gaze beyond measure. I bow to meditate the great way of Buddha, I bow to attain.